introduce to all of you our new athletics director, Vincent Tyron.
Sorry, I'm a few minutes late. I just watched our men's soccer team win the ACC championship, so there's good things happening right now.
Put it simply, he has proven to be a perfect fit for U of M.
We were raised as Cardinals, and you know, we're U of L fans our whole childhood, my siblings and so forth, and you know, couldn't be happier to try to lead this process with diversity.
Welcome to the next episode of What's Next with Eric Wood, presented by Green Remedy. Our guest this week is Vince Tyre, athletic director at the University of Louisville, and I am very excited to interview and have a conversation with Vince. Vince is a good friend of mine who I've learned a lot from over the years. He is an incredible businessman, and he's translated that into the University of Louisville athletic department. He also is a great father, leader, husband, and a guy that I believe in any field you're in, you can learn a lot from. And it'll be really interesting for Louisville Cardinal fans as he peels back the curtain on some of the hires he's made and why. But I think some of the business principles, the leadership principles that you'll learn will benefit anybody listening in today. So I hope you enjoyed this episode. Today's show is brought to you by our title sponsor, Green Remedy. Green Remedy is a company based out of Louisville that I have grown to love. I use their full-spectrum CBD oil products to help with pain, anxiety, and sleep. I have loved using this product, and I love how clean their product is. I have seen the raw materials from the farm, and I was walked through the entire process. I am passionate about getting people off medications, and using an 100% all-natural product like this is so much better for you than pumping pills all day, anti-inflammatories, and stuff that I had to do throughout my career to get by. And now that I'm done, I'm not pain-free, but this CBD oil has helped dramatically and get me off of all those anti-inflammatories and painkillers that are so bad for you. Go to greenremedy.com and use code EWOOD70 at checkout to get 10% off your order, and use the auto ship feature so that you can stay consistent, because you will love the results. Again, that's greenremedy.com, code EWOOD70. Vince, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here.
Absolutely. Let's start from the beginning. Start off by telling me about how you grew up in Louisville, what it was like being Charlie's son, what sports you were into, what was life as a kid like for Vince Tyre?
Well, I was the fourth of five kids. I was born and raised here in Louisville. Dad was born and raised here. Played at U of L, so right away, you know, the whole family is diehard U of L fans. And then, you know, Dad came from a very, I'll say, poor family, but was a Catholic family, which a lot of Louisville was, and that was his thing. Is he was big on education, so as well, obviously, the sports came naturally. But he wanted us to go to the private Catholic schools through high school, and then you're on your own. And so we all went to St. Margaret Mary, and then as kids, we went our different routes. I had two brothers, went to St. X. I was the rebel and went to Trinity.
Nice.
But, you know, sport-wise, because I was the fourth of five and had two older brothers, they were the number one and number two kids in the family, we took to things naturally. Dad was a freak athlete, was All-State in all three, and committed to play football, actually.
Wow.
For Kentucky as a tight end, and then decided he wanted to play basketball and went to U of L. And so we were gifted. Mom was a great golfer, tennis player, so we were just had good genes. Charlie, my oldest brother, was a great athlete. Terry was as well. They went the college of basketball route. My two sisters were good athletes that I'm bookended by, but I played everything. I mean, as a kid, I swam. I swam AAU. I'd get up and go early in the morning, and then I'm playing basketball or football. I even played tennis, and I was competing at a high level in anything we picked up, really, because we just had great genes. And then, like my father, playing three sports in high school, got to Trinity, was very competitive. I was like the first to start varsity as a sophomore in all three sports.
Wow.
Which was a big coup for me back in the time. And I really thought football was going to be it at first, and then baseball was the one that kind of came out of the, you know, the blue, where all of a sudden I'm 16 years old and I'm throwing as hard as major college players.
Wow.
And then that summer I was joking with in basketball, I was getting recruited by, I always say, like the second tier of the top schools, like No offense to Purdue and Wake Forest and Iowa at the time. And I was getting letters, a lot of letters from Jim Boeheim. I'm dating myself and him too at Syracuse, but Gene Cady at Purdue. And you start getting these letters for basketball and you get excited. And then I went to the got invited to the Blue Chip Camp. And after the first like full scrimmage of top players, I was exhausted. And the guy was guarding, I think it was Mr. Michigan at the time, and he wasn't so exhausted.
Right.
So I was like, maybe the fact that I got to get a running start from the free throw line to dunk it and I'm exhausted, baseball might be my sport.
Right.
And in all sincerity, I knew I was a dominant like baseball player. And while I was a really good player in basketball, I knew baseball was probably the best route for me. But it was fun. We played everything as kids. Nonstop.
Yeah, and that's been a theme of guests on our show. You know, nowadays everybody wants to specialize in these AAU camps and these summer leagues for baseball. You know, I don't know in the long run that's great for these kids, and you're seeing it in overtraining issues, overactivity, whether it be with an arm and an early Tommy John or with these basketball players with these debilitating shin splints at 14 years old from running on the hardwood.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like you're a little bit older than me, but you know, even in my generation, everybody played every sport, and nowadays they're letting these kids specialize. And I think from a developmental standpoint, the skills you learn from other sports all end up translating, and then when you get to high school, you're a lot more well-rounded.
Well, I agree with that for sure, and they're not all team sports. Some of them are individual sports, so I think you get a mix of it. I felt like, you know, when you're playing in a tennis tournament, it's you. I mean, there's right. nobody else. And a lot of times, even when you're a pitcher like me in college, you're on the mound. It is you. You got backup, but you got to make the right pitch and all that. But I think you learn different things from the different sports as well. Certainly, just not just how to play with teammates, but coordination level, mm-hmm. different muscles. You know, I see that. Like even throwing a catch in a football to basketball. You know, don't tell me the guys can't make the great outlet pass. Didn't throw a football once in our life.
Right.
So I do think there's a lot of translation in those. And those skills, particularly those that are gifted at playing at a high level like you did, the hand-eye coordination means a lot.
For sure. Yeah, and I always accredited a lot of what benefited me on a football field to playing basketball, moving around on a basketball floor, running up and down the court, the lateral quickness for offensive line play. I always felt like that helped me out a lot. A lot was made when you took the athletic director position here at U of L that you played baseball at Kentucky, but at the time, U of L's baseball program wasn't suitable for, you know, a top level pitcher. Talk about your career at Kentucky though.
Yeah, well, I went to Kentucky, and at that time, you're right, Louisville's program was probably not at the level Kentucky was, more in the top 20. They're playing in the SEC, which was by far the dominant conference. So, you know, I was looking at Florida and Ole Miss and Kentucky, schools like that, as much as I was others. I think Louisville at the time was in the Metro Conference. And there just wasn't the scholarships available back then. You know, I think Louisville baseball might have had 4 scholarships. I could be wrong. And I can remember Derek Mann, the coach at the time, was like, love for you to come here. We could use your talent, but I don't have anything to really give you. And at Kentucky, the other schools I was getting recruited by were full rides to keep me from going pro.
Right.
And there was 13 scholarships back then. Now today we're like 11.4. But, you know, I went there. I got off to a good start. I was a power pitcher in high school. I was throwing 90 miles an hour at an early age. And today seems slow compared to what they throw. But when guys are throwing in the low 80s and you're throwing 90, I mean, it seems like 100 miles an hour probably
right.
at that time. So I had a great high school career, got to Kentucky. My freshman year, I pitched a lot. I started a little, but I was mainly coming out of the bullpen, and I closed some games. Went 4-1, had a terrific year, was really pumped up about it. Sophomore year, we were not very good. And that year we only won 7 SEC games, and I won 4 of them. I went 7-7, but had a really good year comparatively speaking. My last game I pitched that sophomore year was against Georgia, and I had 14 strikeouts, 2 hitter, left for the summer league, all excited. I was draft eligible, you know, my junior year, which my father, being a former pro athlete, said, if you go 3 years, I'll let you go early, assuming you're drafted at the right level. And so I had made plans to leave after my junior year, and I went away that summer, that sophomore year, and tore my labrum in my shoulder and had a surgery in October. And then back then they just didn't know how to treat him as well. So that I was back on the mound pitching against LSU in March, you know, and I'm back into the mix of pitching on the mound. And that was kind of the end of it. I tore it again and didn't even know it. that I had another tear going again because I just didn't rehab it long enough. Nowadays, we let our kids, they sit for a year. And I was excited to get back on the mound, help the team. And I knew I was going to be draft eligible, and I wouldn't want to miss that opportunity. But in the end, it probably cost me my career.
Yeah, and I tell guys all the time, when you're coming into college nowadays, you're going to put in so much work within the program that it's an investment. Take the necessary steps to get to the next level while you're in college, or else it's really not worth the commitment. It's a fun experience, but the amount of time you're going to put in, you better make the necessary steps to get to the next level, or at least that's where your aspirations got to be. And when you get an injury that derails it, that's a shame. But you transitioned from college ball into the business world. What were your first steps into that, and where were you at business-wise prior to taking this U of L AD job?
Yeah, well, I think the one thing that I learned from my father, you know, is dad was a first-rounder and played in the NBA a long time, and he taught me a lot about the professional sport that I never got to play. Funny enough, he kept preparing me for professional sports, because it was such a business. And he said, like, you know, you're going to have guys who want to take your job every day. You're going to have friends, and you're going to have guys who want to take your job.
Right.
But the one thing that I learned from him about when he was done with pro sports is he was lost. You know, he was like, my identity's gone. He came back to Louisville. It's not like people are waiting around to give him a job.
Right.
So they were like, oh, you're a pro athlete. You know, you're not, what do you really want to do? Are you an athlete? You know, I don't know what we have here for you. So ironically, even though Dad had a lot of skills, he had a hard time getting a job. And he relayed that to me. So as I finished out, particularly after my injury, I was dead focused on the books, dead focused on trying to get an internship, which I did, and got in with a company and got off to an early start. But I was getting exposed to things before I left school and even in the summer job with that company that most people my age weren't going to get exposed to. I was off to a serious kickstart to a business career. So I got a lot of responsibility young age, like at 23, that most don't, in leadership positions. And looking back, I was in over my head. I just didn't know it. And then it led to, you know, at 31, I'm president at Fruit of the Loom.
Wow.
Running at that time a portion of it, and then the whole thing at 33. To me, it felt right because I had done a lot in a short period of time. But there's no way I was ready for it at that time. I was so fortunate to get that opportunity. But it led to a CEO job at 34 of another big company with Bain Capital, which is the old Mitt Romney firm. And I stayed in that operating role until I joined a private equity firm as a partner and was then helping other C-level people build companies and from a chairman role. And that's what I did in private equity really up until until I got here. And I was on the foundation board helping turn it around from some issues that were going on over there, unfortunately. And that led to when some issues were occurring in athletics, and I was asked to step in, not knowing whether that was going to be 30 days or 3 months. And here I am 20 months or so later, and we're still rolling. But those principles still apply here. I mean, leadership is transferable. Whether you're I was never fearful of making decisions. If I felt like I was making the right one, and I know this sounds weird going back as a kid, I was the captain of all my teams, even through college, high school. I was on the student council. I volunteered for stuff to try to make a difference. And I never want to be in a true political position. Maybe this is one. I don't know it.
Right.
But I've never been afraid of making a decision. Like, it's never feared me I'm going to hurt somebody's feelings or that this is wrong. As long as I knew it was the right decision, then I made it. So, and I think that's parlayed nicely here because we've had a lot of tough decisions to make in 20 months. And we're in a great place today.
Yeah, you're right. There has been enormous decisions to make. You know, our two big revenue sports have needed new head coaches since you've been on the job. Knowing what was coming and what was ahead of you in the scandal with the basketball program when you stepped in initially, was there reservations to just stay in a current role or just help U of L transition to the next permanent AD? Were there reservations in that decision?
No, I think the reservations were more just, you know, I'd started to create a life in the shadows, not in the forefront, and was pretty comfortable with that, frankly. You know, as I joke, OLP, Operation Low Profile, was my motto, and this is far from. So it's such a 180 from that. But Lori and I talked a lot about it over that weekend when I had to make a decision about, do I want to do this or not? Even talked to my kids about it. And I knew what was going to come with it because it was high profile nationally as much as locally, and the challenges and the second guessing. But again, I was a little pissed off, you know, frankly, because my father had been here, been our first All-American, and I know how prideful he was about the university and how much it meant to him. And I know as a family how much time we had invested in going to all these sports, supporting them all. And personally, I was a considered, quote-unquote, a major donor here. And I was upset, as anybody, just like a fan would be. Mm-hmm. And maybe I had stronger opinions or thoughts about how to get out of it. And that's why I did it. It wasn't certainly wasn't for the accolades as much as because it's in a trophy job. But that was the main reason getting involved.
Yeah, that's great. And we're extremely thankful that you took it, and we love the direction that we're headed right now. We mentioned those two hires, those two big hires that you had to make. Let's start with Mac. How tough was it to bring him down to U of L from Xavier?
I think the biggest thing was giving him a sense of security and stability. But when you're recruiting someone like that, obviously it helped. Christy, his wife, is from Louisville. But people don't realize that, you know, he's got to do what he's got to do for his family. And he's not foolish enough to put him at risk. So I think the thing I tried to do there is make sure we had a plan. Like, what is the vision of where we're going and how we're working through it? And I think the thing I needed to make clear to Chris is what our values were here and that what occurred isn't going to happen again. As a matter of fact, we'd already put steps in place to mitigate that from happening and that he could play a role in that longer term, that I needed a partner, we needed as a university a partner in that, and that he fit. And then he evokes a lot of the characteristics of what I think Louisville's about, athletics, and our Cardinal Bird with the teeth, the toughness, the competitive fire. And he is that Cardinal Bird. I mean, he has that competitive edge to him that I like.
Yep, he does. And he's showing it. He showed it, instilling some toughness immediately in the kids from a team that stunk the year before. And Padgett was in a very tough situation transitioning from Patino and all that. But these guys who didn't play with a ton of toughness the year before, you saw a different nature about them last year. And I went to practices, and you see it from some of the drills and everything else. And I was extremely impressed with him. I've loved getting to know him and love the stability that he'll bring to this program moving forward and getting it back where it needs to be. And then on the other side, we have Bobby Petrino here when you get hired. And we have a Heisman Trophy winner a few years ago. And then we go through just an awful season in football last year. Talk a little bit about that, and then after the season, a lot was made. Jeff Brohm was this hot coaching name. We went after him, and we ended up with Scott Satterfield, who I have grown to love more and more by the day. But talk a little bit about the Jeff Brohm situation, what you can talk about, and how impressed you've been with, assuming you're impressed with him from conversations we had with Scott Satterfield so far.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, going back to the Bobby Petrino situation. Look, the year before we had Heisman winner and then Heisman finalist again, both in Lamar, obviously. But I just didn't feel we were, you know, at that time, like we finished 8-5, you know, it was kind of trying to figure out where we were as a team and with the talent we had and what was coming in recruiting wise. We went in next season. There were some things that I was uncomfortable with, obviously, in the program. And I think that resulted in more losses than I think even he anticipated or that I would. But we were ready for a fresh start. And I think as I started thinking about where that was going to come from, I know there was a lot of fan bias around what Jeff had done in his first couple years at Purdue and done down at Western Kentucky following Bobby. He's exciting football. Jeff does a great job up there and what he's done. But at the same time, I knew that Purdue wasn't going to be ready to let him go very quickly.
Right.
I wanted to be thoughtful about that. So I was parallel pathing. I mean, as I've now disclosed, I was talking to Coach Satterfield the whole way up to West Lafayette when I went to interview Jeff, you know, making sure. And I was straight up with Scott about that. You know, I'm going to interview Jeff. You know why we're interviewing Jeff. He's a great coach. He's got Louisville ties and would understand it. But I think in my meeting with Jeff, you could tell there was a lot of hesitancy, and I picked that up. And I've never had success in business hiring a CEO that had hesitancy.
That's a great point.
And every time I've had somebody that, you know, whether there be a veteran or an up-and-comer, you know, if you feel like my job as the AD is to be helpful without being intrusive. And I felt like Scott, from following him even back to the Michigan days, it sounds weird, just he clicked to me back then, and then followed his stats through and see what was going on at Appalachia State. They always intrigued me because I follow college football, I mean, coast to coast. I love college football. And it was just one of those ones. I wanted to talk to the guy, get to know him. And in the conversation, I was like, wow, this guy's got great leadership skills. And then when I asked him a lot of questions about how he got it done, it was intriguing. I met with Jeff. Obviously, it didn't work out with Jeff. At the same time, I was visiting with Scott down in North Carolina. And that meeting was unbelievable. Like, I felt like he had a clear vision of who he is, what he represents, and how he builds a program through the players, not just by mandating and creating things, but actually building it up through the players. And it's definitely a build up versus tear down mentality. And I knew that if we got the right staff around him, that while we're not in position today, you know, maybe where he'd want to be with like talent and so forth, I think we got a lot of talent on this team. And if anybody's going to pull them out of them to exceed, you know, exceed expectations, I feel like Scott and the staff he's brought on are going to do it.
Absolutely. And their core values are posted all over the facility, and I love what Scott is all about, building trust, a positive energy over there, a work ethic. It's funny, during the coaching search, I sent you a TED Talk from James Franklin talking about core values in a head coach, and it's funny how Scott Satterfield, the very first time I walk into the facility, his core values are painted all over. And in my mind, that just gave me assurance of, okay, this is the type of guy we need leading this university, leading this football program. And you mentioned you build through the players. So basketball, you come in, and David Padgett is transitioning out, and we know that he's not going to be the head man. We're going after Mac. And then when Bobby Petrino gets fired, then we have – an interim coach for a couple weeks. Talk about the hat that you had to wear on the recruiting trail in both sports.
Well, I think in that front, you know, in basketball, it was a little bit different because, you know, frankly, I was recruiting the current players. We weren't really recruiting a ton of players. You know, David Johnson, who's coming in as a freshman. You know, I literally went to the state tournament down in Lexington, and I'm there to watch David, you know, as the AD, is to show our face and be there and make sure he's aware that of our interest level, even though we didn't, you know, at that time really have a head coach. And then the same, so I'm recruiting really Jordan's parents and Malik's mom, Natasha. I'm talking to the parents and of our current players, Darius Perry's father, and making sure they're clear on what we're doing and what we're going after. Mm-hmm. And then we got that done with Chris. On the football side, it was different because, you know, signing day was coming up. I could tell we weren't doing as well as I would liked based on the players who were on the charts, and it did spook me a bit. But I think that what I did in that, I took the recruiting test so I could travel, I could go meet with people, keep our name, be in front, and tell them what we're going to be about as a football program, and then bring a guy in who would back that up the same, but have the same vision. So I was out meeting with high school coaches, players, selling them on where we were, and then did what I said I was going to do. We brought in a coach, which, you know, the thing about both those coaches, Chris and Scott, which, you know, granted they're ranked according to what's available in the position, though, both were the number one hire.
Right.
You know, Chris was the number one last year out of season, you know, for college basketball, and Scott was number one, as it turns out, for football. Now, people in Louisville didn't know who the heck I was hiring when we brought Scott in. Like, what? Who? You know, what's going on? And now by the, you know, he's been Athlon and others. I think maybe it's, I forgot who else ranked him number one, but multiple media sources ranked him the number one hire. I think that that's validation of what we've been able to do in recruiting head coaches as much as trying to recruit players. But you got to wear all those hats. And I think what it probably told those two coaches, I'm going to equal their energy in helping them. I'm going to work as hard as they want to work to make our programs incredibly successful. And I think that holds true for all the programs, not just for the two that really bring in the revenue.
Right, and you were successful in business before you got to athletics at U of L, and you take that same work ethic, which made you successful there, to athletics. So it's common sense for you to hit the recruiting trail. Hey, our CFO is down, or whatever it may be in business. Okay, well, now I need to wear a different hat to make sure that we keep thriving. What are some of the biggest lessons that you learned in business that you're translating to now running an athletic department?
Well, I think the one thing that people forget is the athletic department is a business, and it's complex. That, yes, you've got all these 20-plus sports that all have their own income statement, their own profit-loss statement, however you want to say it. But in running athletics, we still have human resources. We still have marketing. We still have sales. We still have accounting and, you know, and finance. All those things are all still there, just like you got to run a business. The aspect, the nuance of learning college athletics and where you got to get up to speed is NCAA rules, ACC, you know, bylaws, you know, inside the conference you operate in, recruiting, you know, dead periods and things. You learn all those things, but I don't want to say I simplify it to this, but I can read those bylaws and read those rules and figure them out, and we got a great compliance department to get me up to speed. But I think the biggest thing was, do you know how to hire talent? Do you understand what the needs are here? And I don't get wrapped up in the glamour of resumes. I never have. You see that a lot in pro sports, frankly, where you are, Eric, from that life. I see it a lot where resume means more than fit in some cases. And I don't want to throw somebody under the bus here, but
right.
I watch the hires that go on a lot of times. And it happens in business too, where, I always warn people that now CEOs that I work with that don't get wrapped up in the glamour of a resume that they've done this, isn't it? Are they the right fit? Set out your 5 key criteria for this position, what that person needs to bring, and make sure they hit those more than if they spent 20 years as a senior person at wherever, you know, Target or something. And be disciplined, because if you're not disciplined in who you bring in and you let people come in with a glamour resume, you can screw up the core group very quickly if you don't find people that fit in that group with the other people there. And in all cases, this is going to sound maybe contradicting, you don't have to have an A+ on every single hire you have, as long as people they surround themselves with, and I wouldn't say I was an A+ AD when I got here, but I feel like as a department, what we're producing and what the sports are producing are at an A+. You compliment yourself and your team in that way. And, you know, so that's when I look at where we are with some of these programs, finding the right fit. Holly April for softball, great fit, comes in first year, takes us to the NCAA regional final for the first time since 2012. Scott Teeter in lacrosse. Those hires are as exciting as Chris and Scott when you're sitting in the AD chair.
Definitely, especially in regards to having a healthy athletic department altogether. And, you know, the coaches that I've been able to get to know here, Mack, Satterfield, McDonald, Walls, you know, you're probably your 4 major sports, especially from a potential revenue standpoint, man, all phenomenal people, have great families. It's kind of all-encompassing, and it's all about what U of L seems to be all about right now in the direction that they're heading. That takes me to my next question. What is your dream at U of L? Would it be a national championship in football and basketball, or is it well-rounded success in all sports? Is there, like, what is the specific dream for Vince Tyree's U of L tenure at U of L?
Yeah, gosh, I'm not sure I really think about, like, personal things, you know, like that, because the emphasis for me has been on the student-athlete experience, and maybe because mine ended in a weird way, right?
Right.
You know, I was a good student and all that, and certainly pushed it. And I was one who took advantage of those academic tutorial stuff that was there available. But just because of the injury and the way it was transpired, if I had that injury now, I probably would be had a chance to play in the major leagues for a long time. So I think for me, it's different that I come into it not saying, and this is going to sound weird, I win one national championship, so I'm going to do all I can to get there and make sure we compete in these sports and get these teams ready to win the ACC and NCAAs. But I do think the driving thing behind me is the student-athlete experience is the first and foremost. And it sounds corny, but it really is. And the additional funds we put towards summer school, the additional funds we put towards academic in general, giving money, financial aid to trainers and managers who got to work just the same amount of hours, all that is important. I'm watching our graduation success rate. It ticked up 2 points. But in the same vein, don't get me wrong, we've set goals in this department, and it's not just one, but number one is to compete and win in ACC and NCAA championships. Number two is, you know, we're not going to have zero, level one or level two violations of the NCAA. Got to be that way. financial surplus every year, which is, you know, difficult when you come into the situation I came in. We had to do a little, we had to create some efficiency and cost cutting to get there. But I think that is part of it. But the student athlete experience that is in there, as well as talking about our goals, they all kind of mesh together. So I'm not sure if there's one, but I want them to have a really great time here. And that have great people around them, whether it's in the athletic department or the coaching staff or the support staff. So when they leave, it's like a great time. They're done with their career, but they're sad to leave because it was so much fun, and they had great teammates that are now lifelong friends, and create that so that you know, they come in here. Winning's a blast. We both know that.
Yep.
So I want them to win at a high level, but I want them to leave here knowing that that was awesome, and I'm coming back for every alumni event. And,
yeah.
And that they feel welcome to come back for every alumni event. So it's kind of hard to just say it's like one thing, but athletically, for sure, we want to win championships.
Right. I love that. And you're walking the walk on that when you host, you know, these student athletes at your house in the summer, and you speak at the FCA event, and you know these kids' parents by their first names. That goes a long way in impacting these lives. And then you hire coaches that bring their family around the facility, and they hire a staff like Scott did over in football and Mac's staff, you know, guys that are family oriented, treat the players right. And that all goes into the student athlete experience, which you said, and our facilities at U of L are incredible as well. Mm-hmm. And the meals they get now and everything else, you're well on your way of achieving that.
Of course, the football guy mentions the meals.
I know, right? Well, I'm jealous of them now. You know, we didn't get fed quite like they do now, which is great. You know, I'm not one of those bitter alumni that come back and they say, man, look at this weight room now. I wish we had this or these meals. I'm glad they had it. Maybe it's because I had success at the next level. I can take a mature viewpoint on that. But, you know, they get more scholarship money than we got back then. Good. Yeah. I'm glad. You know,
me too.
Yeah, for sure. I'm not bitter about it in any way at all. Let's flip gears a little bit. If you could give a guy in my situation, just out of the NFL, some investment advice, knowing what you know now, what would it be? Because I get approached all the time with the next latest and greatest pro forma, and all pro formas look good, and all projection sheets always look good. What are some easy, practical advice in regards to that?
Well, you know, and believe me, I'm like you, I've been fortunate in business, so I've earned a few bucks, and along the way, I've invested in a number of startups. And I would tell you, initially, when I first got in, not you know, my father, you know, wasn't a business guy. He was a sales manager in Corrugate Boxes. So it's not like I came out with a ton of education on that. But when I had my first major job, I'll say a significant income when I was at Fruit of Loom, I had excess income because I wasn't a big spender per se. So I was like, well, what do I invest in? And I was quick to find the quick buck as anybody is, just like athletes. And it's funny, my own father was like, what are you doing?
Right.
Like, why are you doing that? You know, we didn't get raised that way and rolling the dice. And what I realized was I was betting on others a lot, but I was betting on others who hadn't done it and didn't have enough deep track record. It was a lot of guys who had been in a business, had an idea and said, I'm going to raise some money and make this idea work. Or they had tinkered with something. And all due respect to those people who have made it big, most don't, as we all know the odds.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I would say that you put money with those who have a track record, whether they're somebody like my financial advisor, Tuffy Woods or Raymond James. For that part of it, I trust him. For the other part where I invest in deals, I invest in private equity funds. I'm in debt, mezzanine debt funds, but I'm doing with people who have earned a good IRR, good internal rate of return for a series of time. These are really sharp people who know the diligence. They spend weeks on months on end before they take institutional and high net worth individuals' money and put it in a deal. Not a month or looking through a pro forma a weekend saying, I need your answer by Monday, which I did. Somebody'd say, hey, I need 50,000 or 25,000, whatever the number was. I can tell you about my stinkers, you know, early in my life, but I got educated by that, and I'll call that my tuition.
Right.
And it was expensive because, you know, you get into things and you all, and there's times where you vet them properly, and then just things happen. It could be whatever it may be. But I'm going with the odds, and I do spend a lot of time for those, you know, for coming out of. I do invest, you know, in where I came from, too, to some degree. Those, and the returns are terrific. They're teens and above kind of stuff if you're in the mid-teens or mid-20s is where you want to be, and you're in those kind of funds, and it's low risk, better return. So that's where when I talk to pro athletes, I try to use my network to introduce them to people, and I say, do if you want to do it or don't do it. Here's the risk. Here's what can happen. But the thing I learned early on when friends would call me and say, and even pro athletes, and you know a couple of these names, would say, hey, I want to do a deal. I want to do a deal. I'd say, I did that a couple times where they get into a deal, and maybe it, some of them they really kicked butt, and some of them it was okay or not or didn't kick butt. And I'd say, you got to be in a portfolio, you know, because the right. fund, the overall fund is where you're going to get your return. But, they want to get involved, but they try to cherry pick. Look, I think I'm pretty good at investing in companies, and I'd still say I like to have the risk spread out, and so finding someone they can trust, as you know, we always hear about the bad news. There's a lot of good financial advisors out there that have helped pro athletes that know that kind of level of money or know where to get them, and also it's not just where to invest money, but to help them control their spending,
right?
Because you're in a lifestyle that's running fast. You may not be the highest earner on the team, and you may be actually living beyond your means while you're playing. What I mean by that is because you can't afford later in life to be spending the way you're spending now.
Right.
So having someone that'll be honest with you and tell you and take their advice. And then the second thing is just, you know, finding places. But betting on startups is difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to do that, you better be with a venture capital fund that's done it for a long time. I just think, you know, investing in smart people have great track records versus just a lot of these individual deals that pop up. I've done it, don't get me wrong, and I've done some in the community just for, like, to be a community advocate. And as I said, I've got some education out of that.
I like that with the community advocate in the Louisville City deal here in town, soccer deal you're involved with. That kind of stuff helps the city and advances it. I got some advice recently from a guy that said, look, Eric, a guy who's coming to you with the next Facebook, next Google, he's probably not coming to you. He doesn't need your money. He doesn't need Tom Brady's money. He doesn't need your name. He doesn't need Tom Brady's name. I use Tom because he's got a ton of money and a huge name. Now, if you have a buddy that, you know, has a track record and you want to invest some money with him in something, yes, he might let you in on something, but nobody wants to give away money. So they're not coming to you with these phenomenal ideas. There's trillions of dollars in these venture capital firms that can invest in this stuff, and they vet them out themselves. So they're not coming to you probably with the next Facebook. So if you never do another one again, which I've done some small deals, some of which are still in place, none have been a true grand slam home run yet. He's like, if you don't do another one, that probably wouldn't be the end of the world for you. But we do some recurring questions each week. So we'll start off with, if all jobs in America paid the same, what would you do for a living?
Wow, that's a great one. Because I think about I love at this point in my life, I would say in the teaching aspect of it, because where I'm really getting a kick out of this job and what I had before is the mentoring. And if there was a way to go and just be that, use my experience and my knowledge to be a mentor, and it was a quote unquote, call it paid job, even if it wasn't, because I get to do a lot of it that's not. That would be it, because I love sharing my own experiences and not expecting a thing back.
That's great. What is your favorite book?
Well, I think Built to Last, you know, gosh, you go back when that came out, I just thought at that time when it talked about creating a vision of companies and, you know, I know Ford had that tagline Built to Last, but I think when that came out, it just registered with me. And I know Good to Great came later in other books that he wrote, but Built to Last at the time where I was in my life, taking over at Fruit of Loom, it meant a lot to compare like old brands, Zenith TV to, you know, RCAs and different. It made you really, I just felt it was really stimulating to where I was going into a brand that was trying to figure out what its new identity was going to be. And it was an old, which Fruit of Loom's still around today, but I'd say Built to Last. Just because it stuck with me.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out. What has been the most exciting part of this new career in being the athletic director?
I'm a sports junkie.
Right.
So probably behind the scenes. I've been fortunate, and part has been personal choice and part has been professional, that I've been able to do a lot of cool stuff. Been to Super Bowls. VIPs kind of stuff, World Series, All-Star games, you know, Final Fours, you know, go to championships, a variety of things, the Masters, play golf with Tiger Woods. You know, that the stuff I've got to do is cool stuff. And I think this just adds to what I really enjoyed that part of my life, where I, because of who I was affiliated in the companies, and I was affiliated with Nike and Adidas as a supplier to the business I ran for a long time, I got to do a lot of neat stuff. And I think it just continues that. I'll never get tired of going to great events. I still get the juices flowing, even when, quote-unquote, my team's not in it.
That's cool. Okay, so now we have some rapid-fire questions. These can be shorter answers, or you can elaborate if you want to. What's your favorite restaurant in Louisville?
Probably Bricks on LaGrange, over on LaGrange. That's where my wife and I had our first dinner date, and it probably has meaning to me, so that's got to be it.
I haven't tried that place before.
Yeah, it's great. I eat the Fat Boy meal. It's a bolognese. It's really good.
Nice. I'll have to check it out. What was your first car?
Oh, my gosh.
With five kids in the house.
Jeez.
Was it a hand-me-down?
It was a hand-me-down. It was a mallet two-door baby blue Malibu Classic with no air conditioning and the headliner falling in. Vinyl seats.
That's great. Who is the most famous person in your phone?
The most famous person in my phone? Gosh. I'm trying to think, and I'm not being silly just because I've been fortunate to be around, a lot of the...
Well, when you played golf with Tiger, did you get his number?
No, I didn't do that. I probably should have at the time, although he wouldn't have probably recognized me.
How'd you shoot? Were you intimidated by him?
Oh, you're going to laugh. I told you he had to leave in the middle of the round. I was up one. So we were playing at Grand Cypress in Orlando, but he's not my phone. I'm trying to think it's gotta be, I know it's going to sound funny, probably Tom Lee, which people would know that name, but from the private equity world, Thomas H. Lee, Tom has met him through my partner in the private equity world, and he accomplished a lot, made like $900 million when he sold Snapple and then did it again, and he's but famous in terms of business. Tom Lee would probably be it.
Gotcha. What was your first job?
My first job, I worked in a plastics factory, Jones Plastics here locally, and I was literally on the production line. I mean, I'd done like grass cutting, everything else, but my first job, like get up in the morning, go into a factory, was at Jones Plastics, and I was on the assembly line. I mean, we were putting together cabinet doors doors on cabinets and boxing them up and so forth. And I did everything down that line. I screwed the doors on. You know, my role was to keep up as we were rolling down through there. But I did a variety of things inside their plant.
From the assembly line to underwear to private equity. What is your favorite movie?
I love comedy.
Me
so,
too.
So it's hard for me because I think that I guess I'd have to say Caddyshack just because I thought it was so funny. But there, I could go through like all Fletch and Meatballs, and there's a whole variety of them that I think would be great.
When I watch a movie, I'm not looking generally for a real intense night. A movie to me is just a release. I want a happy ending. I want to get a good laugh in and move on.
No, but I love the old school, all the dumb, funny movies, corny ones. That's me.
That's awesome. Well, that's all I got for you. I truly appreciate your time. I know I speak on behalf of this city and this university. We're extremely excited to have you. I think people are going to get a huge kick to get this peel behind the curtain of, you know, your transition into here, and really looking forward to what you're going to build in here in the future here.
Well, we're glad to have you back in Louisville permanently, too. So you're a part of our legacy here, and I'm appreciative of that.
Well, I appreciate it. I'm hoping to get a few true home games through ACC Network and get off the road a little bit and do a few home games from U of L this season. But we'll see. I'm looking forward to covering the Cardinals this year and really excited about it.
Thanks, Eric. Appreciate it.
Yep, thanks for coming on. Throughout my NFL career, I worked with many custom clothing companies. Guys would come from around the country and set up shop in our facility and try and sell us clothes. And no one has compared to someone I work with locally in Louisville, Jordan Yoakum with Tom James. He is an expert concierge that can save you time. You know, I don't even have a full-time job right now, and it's hard for me to go to the mall and pick out clothes or to order something online, and it generally doesn't fit, and then I either got to go get it tailored or me and my wife got to go send it back. Put an end to that. Jordan works within a 100-mile radius of Louisville, Kentucky, and he will come to you with the clothes, and it's great. You can contact Jordan at j.yokum@tomjames.com or visit the website tomjames.com for more info. Let Jordan create a game plan with you for your wardrobe, just like we did preparing for NFL defenses. But instead of attacking defenses, you'll be attacking your next business meeting, wedding, or derby event in style. That's j.yokum, Y-O-C-U-M, at tomjames.com. And when you contact Jordan, make sure you tell him Eric Wood sent you. Thank you for listening to What's Next with Eric Wood, presented by Green Remedy. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please rate it 5 stars and subscribe. That goes a long way for us with this podcast. Tune in a couple weeks for another new episode.